Today's show is brought to you by KickUp. KickUp helps leaders ask the right questions to get actionable data, visualize information to guide effective next steps, and track teacher growth over time. Learn more at kickup.co. This fall's top conference for educators and leaders is the What Great Educators Do Differently conference. It'll be held October 14th and 15th in beautiful Kansas City, Missouri. See speakers like Jeff Zoa, Ken Williams, and Lavana Roth, all past guests here on the show. Register today at WGEDD.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
I'm so excited to bring today's guest, Tom Hirk. I mean, this guy drops so many value bombs and shares so much wisdom with the listeners. You're going to freak out when you hear this episode. Tom has been an educator since 1983 in a career that has spanned all grade levels and roles in public education. His experiences as a teacher, administrator, district leader, Department of Education project leader, and executive director have provided a unique context for his ed philosophy. Hey, listen, in this episode, you're going to learn so much, like I said. Like, how many leaders did you leave behind? That's a question we should all ask. You build trust by being trustworthy. That kids that challenge us the most also need us the most. And here's another just hard-hitting question. Are you there to lead or just to survive? So learn about that so much more, like the Significant 72. Listen, I don't take it for granted that you are here listening to the Better Leaders podcast. Thank you so much and enjoy the show. So Tom, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
You know, it's a really interesting question, and I have to come clean and say that my first pursuit wasn't really education. I was setting up to become a doctor, and I'd done my first year and thought that that's where I was going to head to. A couple of things happened along the way. First, I had always enjoyed being with youth. I'd done a lot of coaching of my own kids and other people's children, and so that was a bit of an angle through some of that as I started to rethink what I wanted to do. Secondly, I met my wife, and we had talked all about things that we wanted to be doing. And, you know, it just changed for me. And I've got to tell you, probably the single best thing that happened, because I can say this quite clearly as a 34-year veteran now of the education scene, I absolutely love being an educator. I can't imagine ever being anything else. I've been very fortunate in what this career has provided for me. And I'd like to think I've made a reasonable contribution back.
Absolutely. You know, and the thing that always really, I guess, tickles me almost is that I'm excited to go to work every day. And it's just that it's a new day. You're impacting the lives of kids and working with some great adults. And you make a difference every single day when you show up. And we're truly blessed to be in this industry because of that. Hey, Tom, how would you describe your leadership style and how did you develop this style?
And again, I think the style has changed over time. I was very fortunate in my first year. I had an outstanding principal who took myself and anyone else who was interested at all in leadership aside. You know, on a staff of approximately 50 people, as of today, I think 34 or 35 of those people pursued careers in leadership all the way to the highest titles in any district. John Dressler is the root of all of that. And he reminded me very early on that the true test of leadership is the response to this question. How many leaders did you leave behind? Mm-hmm. I believe that for me, the intention in being a leader now is to really establish a collective commitment, collaboration in the truest sense of the word. You know, not that artificial collaboration of all heads nodding in agreement, but the kind of collaboration that we've built such a sense of trust that we can force up the tough issues, that we can appreciate good ideas brought forward and our capacity to make them better ideas. You know, I can look back over a 34-year career and say this without any doubt, that anything we did was vastly superior to anything I did. You know, most of the I did came as a result of external pressures. I had to meet a deadline that was simply imposed, and I didn't get a chance to talk it over with the brilliant people I was fortunate enough to work with. The stuff we did just got better and better, and we owned it.
I'm fascinated, absolutely fascinated by this idea of trust as a leader. And you talked about creating a collective commitment as well. So with those two ideas, trust and the collective commitment, what do you do as a leader to build those things?
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. And again, I think I'm like anybody else in our profession in that I've tried to do a lot of reading both within the education sector and outside of the education sector. You know, this won't come as a surprise to anybody. I've done a lot of work on, with Stephen Covey's literature, right?
Yep,
and one of the first things Covey talks about with trust is in order to build trust, you have to be trustworthy, right? And so I wanted to be worthy of people's trust and demonstrate that. And sometimes that means you got to take a step back. You know, I knew when I pursued a leadership career, I'd only taught for 8 years. And I got to tell you, I don't think I was the world's best teacher at that point. I thought I still had a whole lot more to learn about teaching. But I was in a small community and the opportunity came up. And it was one of those things where if you didn't jump on the opportunity, you might have had a nice long wait before a similar opportunity like that came up. I knew that there was lots for me to learn early on as a leader and being a fairly young person in a leadership role. And I was fortunate to have a lot of people in the teaching profession who made a different decision. They made the decision that they wanted to be the best math teacher or the best science teacher for their entire career. And they exhibited outstanding leadership. And I had a chance to learn from those people. You know, and trust means also then that as people are stumbling along, because in our profession, again, if you're not struggling, you're not trying hard enough. It means that rather than rushing to consequence, you rush into support.
Oh, I love that. So instead of rushing to consequence, you're rushing into support. That is a quote to share, my friend Tom. I love it. So do you have a story? Can you be specific about one of those educator colleagues that was leading by example and how they touched you?
Yeah, as I said, I can go back, you know, even to the first principal, John Dressler. And, you know, imagine yourself as a first-year teacher, and you're just excited to have the job. Like many first-year teachers, I was overwhelmed by the assignment. You know, but John Dressler made it clear anytime I wanted to stay after school to chat with him, he would be more than welcome to accommodate that. Anytime I had questions, I wasn't even sure what the questions were, but I was just inspired when he was around to just sit and pick his brain on various leadership items. When I went from that small community to the community where my wife grew up in, I had another great mentor in Bill Maslechko, who was the superintendent at the time. And, you know, he brought me on board and same thing. He brought me in initially as a substitute teacher, but he said, you know, you're going places. You know, to hear that early on in your career gets you believing. Now, listen, whether it was true or not, it created this notion in my mind that I could be that kind of person. Because I got to tell you, I don't know that when I first entered teaching, I ever had in mind to do any of the leadership roles I've been fortunate enough to do. In fact, my wife sometimes reminds me that she used to always ask me if I ever wanted to get into administration. And my answer was somewhere along the lines of, you've got to be kidding. That has to be the worst job ever.
Yeah.
Why would I want to do that? Being a teacher is all I wanted to be. So, you know, any job that I've had and I've gone all the way through, you know, being an assistant superintendent in a district, I've worked in our Department of Education. I've had a chance to be a sessional lecturer. I've been elected to lead principals associations. And now I get this wonderful job of consulting. I can tell you none of those were part of the path I had in mind. But what I've always tried to do is be open to the experience and to learn as I go.
That's great. You know, Tom, I read a recent blog post of yours that talks about all meaning all. And we're talking about every kid matters. We want them all to succeed, which is, you know, a mission of our school that each student learns at high levels. One idea really jumped out to me, and in it you propose that the difference, you say, isn't in our students, it's in the way we view them. That dedicated educators creating a collective will overcome even the direst of circumstances. So again, you know, we were talking about trust and the collective commitment, but how do you also build this culture where every kid matters and that we are in it so that they all succeed?
I think it comes down to, you know, initially at least holding the conversations, right? You know, as I travel now, it's pretty common if I ask people why they got into this blessed profession of ours, everybody will talk about kids within the first two sentences, right? So if that's our touchstone, let's honor that commitment. If that's what we've said we're in here for, to be those difference makers, then let's honor that commitment. And let's not only think about the easy to reach, easy to teach kids, but those kids who challenge us the most. Because here's a truism I've come to realize in my 34 years. The kids who challenge us the most, they actually need us the most. Mm. They may not be able to articulate it. They're not going to come to school and put their hand up and say, hey, help me because I'm behind. They're going to come to class and they're going to do something flagrant. You know, they're going to be the kid who sits in your class and says math stinks. Why? Because that's much more inflammatory and might get a rise out of their peers. But it belies the fact that they really need us, right? And so we've got to be willing to not bite on the easy hooks, you know, and let some of that slide to go back to honoring our commitment. So I think, you know, it all begins with the willingness to have those initial conversations. You know, I felt early on that my job as principal was to eliminate as many of the barriers as I could for teachers that allowed them to be the brilliant people they described in their interview, right? That was on me if the situation was that they couldn't do that anymore.
Oh, that's so good. And it's just another mindset shift that just like with the kids that, you know, we need to make sure that we're giving our all to take care of them. This idea that that kids that challenge us the most and need us the most, and even your heart to serve your teachers, that they come in an interview and they're trying to really show off like who their best version of themselves are. But you're taking the responsibility saying, how can I, Tom, create an environment so that this person and who they say they are can thrive? And that, you know, it's not easy to do. And I don't know that leaders always take that type of responsibility, but that's sort of the higher calling that I think we should be held to, you know, as a school leader for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, in that whole notion of leadership, it's a question everybody who gets into leadership has to respond to. And that is this: are you there to lead or are you there to survive? Leading means that you're willing to take some risks. Leading means that that you're also going to model the struggle and you're going to demonstrate the resilience that comes. Surviving means you might just like the trappings of the job, the new business card, the bigger office, and, you know, some of the other associated perks. Surviving means you might not want to rock the boat because your intent really is to get to the next job or the next title. Leading means you're willing to stumble and struggle and be there. And to me, that's going to emerge in a much better spot. I think it's a mistaken notion to believe that people who become leaders are now going to be error-free or, you know, don't know how to manage when they make a mistake. I think that's where we've got to be willing to go.
Absolutely. And Tom, I just have to congratulate you too, because you are a quote generating machine. And the better leaders, you know, the listeners of this podcast, I want you to really chew on that. Are you there to lead or are you there to survive? And again, going back to those kids that challenge us the most, need us the most, it reminds me of this, this book and audio teaching that I listened to called Loving on Purpose. It was for, parents who wanted to, raise incredible children. But I thought I can learn from this idea and apply it to my classroom.
Absolutely.
And here's the thing. One of the ideas there is to not jump on the emotional roller coaster that kids bait us to get on.
Yeah.
And that goes back to that, you know, the kids that challenge the most, need us the most. And I can think of kids that I use this on. And they would say something, I hate English, you're the worst teacher, and I'm never doing your homework.
Yeah.
And what I learned from this book is a series of sort of in the middle of the road responses that said, listen, I'm mature, but I'm not jumping on this emotional roller coaster. And so they would say, Mr. Bauer, you're the worst teacher I've ever had. And I would say, that could be.
Yeah.
I'm never doing your homework. Well, that may be, but you know, what's going to happen as a result. And so what you do is not jump on the emotional roller coaster, and you allow them to actually become problem solvers, because you're not going crazy with them and you're actually raising the standard and expectation of what you have for that young person.
You've got it, Daniel. You know, I say this to people sometimes, you know, you don't have to catch every ball that's thrown at you, right? You know, I think sometimes people get caught up in, and I love what you've just said about emotions. And you know, I think in our profession, we need to be passionate, because passion is driven by our beliefs. I don't think we need to be emotional, because emotional is driven by our feelings, right? And I think there's a line that needs to be drawn. I want to be surrounded, and I benefited by being surrounded by passionate educators. I think emotional folks, you know, it ends up just cycling, right? We get into that escalation that we know ultimately we might win because we're in the power position. But what do we lose along the way when we escalate, right?
Right.
The old Mark Twain quote, you know, never argue with an idiot. They drag you down to their level, then beat you with experience, right? You know, I don't want to get caught up in that. Now, listen, I'm not error-free. I'd love to say, gosh, I never get emotional again. You know what? Sometimes when I'm driving, as you know, the traffic, you know, in and around your area or some of the other larger cities, you can get pretty frustrated there.
You can.
I just remind myself, though, is this being the real you? Are you really changing anybody else? If you get upset with the driver in the other vehicle, is that changing them or is it just changing you? And if you're changing you, then the next person you encounter doesn't get to see the very best you. They get to see a substandard version of you. I know this to be true. Our kids need the very best version of their teacher every day. They don't need to hear how good you used to be. They don't need to hear about your glory days. They need to live them and experience them if we're really interested in all means all and hitting 100%. And I believe that's the only goals we ought to have in education today.
I was watching your YouTube about students being the future. I am the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, I connected with so many different ideas and themes that you presented. One that was shocking to me was, I think you were talking about an experience you had on the West Coast, and you were talking about the importance of connection and relationships. And I don't know if you gave the survey formally or informally or how you collected this data, but what I remember, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I noted was you said that 50% of the kids you asked said they did not have a meaningful connection with an adult in the building.
Yep.
So, you know, can you parse out some of the implications with that? And then more importantly, again, this idea of building these great environments, how do we ensure that our adults and kids are connecting in positive and meaningful ways?
For sure. You know, and in essence, that's what we'd ask the kids, you know, was if they could identify one significant adult. And, you know, between the kids who said they were unsure and the kids who said they couldn't, listen, if you're unsure, I think you're pretty sure.
Right.
It was a threshold we didn't want to see crossed, and it did. And so we follow that up with checking into some behavioral outcomes that came with that. And we saw a much greater spike, as anyone in the audience will anticipate, with antisocial behavior like gangs, like drugs, like violence. Right. And we're talking a fairly small community. We're not talking a large urban center. And so, you know, my only thoughts were, gosh, if this could happen in a smaller community, what starts to happen now when kids are not connected all the way through? I think it's been a mistake, maybe a mistaken belief held that as kids get older, they don't need to have a significant adult. Now, you'll know this from you know, the school you work in. I don't know of a kid all the way through to grade 12 who doesn't want a positive relationship, who would not appreciate an adult champion at school every day. It's for every kid. And we can see the huge impact that has, right? You know, I share a number of researchers' work that talk about when kids are connected, you know, the positive outcomes in every aspect that we might want to measure in school all the way through, you know, stronger outcomes happening in the higher grades. You know, the single best predictor, school-based predictor of success in mathematics from the 8th to 12th grades is a student's perception of their connectedness with their teacher.
Wow.
I mean, that's in our really heavy-duty academic area.
Yeah.
Right? So I know this. Every kid wants to and would benefit from having a strong adult relationship connection champion in their schools.
Do you have any really practical tips on how to build those relationships with the students?
Yeah, I mentioned to you, you know, that the school district that I was doing some work with just outside of Chicago, Woodridge, Illinois, and you know, hats off to them and their assistant superintendent, Greg Wolcott. A few years back, we started an initiative we called Significant 72 for a couple of reasons. One, John Hattie's work, Invisible Learning, talks about teacher-student relationship having an impact of 0.72. Now, without boring your audience with a long lesson on data and stats, in Hattie's analysis, 0.4 of a standard deviation is equivalent to 12 months growth, the typical growth we would expect to see when a kid has a teacher for a year. So 0.72 is almost doubling that on the basis simply of teacher-student relationship.
Wow.
So we started Significant 72 based on two reasons. One, Hattie's 0.72, and two, the first 3 days of school, the equivalent of 72 hours, doing nothing but building relationships. Kid to kid, kid to adult, adult to kid, adult to adult. Lots of activities in those first 3 days. Not the same focus as we've seen traditionally in schools on assigning lockers, assigning textbooks, assigning classrooms, homerooms, etc. The time is spent building relationships. 72 minutes every month, all of our assemblies focused on the positive affect of building connections. 72 seconds every day that we take time to celebrate. Now, sometimes people say, well, where do we find the time? Let's be clear. We have the time. Time's our most precious resource in school, and we have to decide if we want to make time for the things that are important. Here's what I know happens all the time. We always address misbehavior. We will always find time to point out what is not happening. Mm-hmm. We have to be much more intentional about pointing out what is happening, right? In the book, Ken and I talk about being positive by design versus negative by default.
Yeah, that's very similar to some of my training too. And we had an approach in middle school I taught in Champaign, Illinois, called the Nurtured Heart Approach. And are you familiar with it by any chance?
I've heard of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the idea is very similar, that you need to focus and make time and room and space for all the great things happening in your class day in, day out, instead of focusing on that one or two knuckleheads that are acting out. Yeah. Because once they realize that attention that they really want, which is driving that behavior, once they realize they only get it by doing the positive stuff, by honoring the class norms, and raising their game in the classroom, then you've got this well-oiled machine. Now, of course, everything's not perfect, but just that small mindset shift in how you address kids, and this works with adults too, it's crazy to see its impact on behavior. And so I'm not surprised by the significant 72 and the importance of just building these relationships with students and, I would say our peers in the building as well.
You've got that absolutely right. And that's the other not really secret, because everybody should know it, but the stuff that we talk about with kids works equally the same for adults. Mm-hmm. There isn't an adult who doesn't want to be connected. There isn't an adult who doesn't want us to live what we've said. Right. If you're telling me your class is built on responsibility and respect, then those ought to be the two first things you notice and spend your time addressing. That doesn't mean we ignore when kids are being disrespectful or irresponsible, but we use our focus of responsibility and respect to help them get better at it. So we go in and we notice all the things that are going right long before we notice anything going wrong. Right. The minute we shift that focus, it's amazing how we view time in a different way. Right? The question no longer is about do we have time, it's are we willing to make time.
Let's pause here for a message from our sponsor. Today's show is sponsored by KickUp, a professional learning data analytics company that provides an easy-to-use platform, helping school leaders optimize their PD resources and efforts by soliciting and synthesizing teacher input on professional development needs, creating an intuitive and simple dashboard so leaders can take immediate and informed action to support teachers, measuring and reporting the impact of the PD efforts over time. Schools, districts, and charter networks leverage KickUp's platform and consultative support to synthesize data so that all stakeholders, administrators, coaches, and teachers can monitor progress, identify meaningful professional learning actions, and demonstrate and share impact. Learn more at kickup.co. Today's podcast is sponsored by the What Great Educators Do Differently Conference on October 14th and 15th in beautiful Kansas City, Missouri. Let me give you two reasons to attend. There's visionary presenters at each What Great Educators Do Differently Conference. You'll learn from a dozen or more presenters who are recognized nationally and internationally as among the foremost educational thinkers in the field. There's also connection opportunities. In addition to learning from presenters who are accomplished educational trailblazers, each What Great Educators Do Differently conference has time built into the schedule for a mini unconference, allowing intentional time for attendees from all over to network and discuss issues in which they're interested. You can learn more at WGEDD.com. Leading a school may be the most difficult job in the world, but what if I could guarantee that you could accomplish so much more in 1 year than you've been able to in any years past? The secret is to stop leading in isolation and to do so in community. The solution is to join one of my education masterminds. We meet weekly for an hour and discuss leadership and solve complex problems. Text Better Mastermind, that's all one word, to 33444. That's Better Mastermind to 33444 and start your journey to your best year ever. Now, back to the show. So I read on your website, there's a second edition coming out of the Pyramid of Behavior Interventions. I believe it says released mid-July. And so can you tell us the story behind this book and the value it provides educators and school leaders?
Yeah, so you know that was the first book that I had a good fortune to write for Solution Tree, Pyramid of Behavior Intervention, Seven Keys to a Positive Learning Environment. And I wrote that with Charlie Coleman and Chris Weber. And in that, we identified what we thought were the seven keys to really turn things around from a behavioral perspective in schools. A lot of the information aligned with Sugai's work on positive behavior supports, positive behavior interventions and supports now. And so we drove that work from there. That book has sold very well. It inspired, you know, lots of folks to take a different look at how they viewed what was going on in their schools. One of the key tenets of that is that we talk about expectations, we don't talk about rules. You know, the old adage about rules are made to be broken. Expectations are lifelong. There isn't an adult environment that doesn't want to see us having an expectation of respect, for example. Right? So, you know, we carry those through, not just because the kids in grade 3 or 6 or 9 or 12, but because these are important lifelong pieces. I've been asked, recently and a number of times over the years, and I was always a little reluctant to write a solo book because, you know, as in many of the other aspects of our profession, I really enjoy bouncing ideas off of other people. So all the books I've written to this point, save a couple of the little ones you referenced, I Am the Future, and the other one I wrote, What Do You Make?, I've written all of my other books with collaborators and partners, and I've really enjoyed that possibility of. So this one's going to be my first solo, and it's a follow-up, and it's aimed at taking the seven keys to a classroom level and also to dealing with folks new to our profession or new to their job. So we've tried to, have another early in our career book, you know, that people might be able to have as another companion. I know a lot of folks have the Harry Wong book early on. And so yes. Tried to write something like that I think could be a real helpful companion tool that really does go at the behavior piece and comes at the approach you and I are talking about right now. Let's be positive by design. Let's be intentional. Let's look for the good while we are building up the deficits in some of our kids and helping them close the gaps. You know, I don't know of any kid who's ever been consequenced to better behavior. So let's start to work, you know, with our primary focus in schools being to teach. Let's teach. And let's teach in behavior the same way as we would teach in academics.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that, too. I really appreciate that. Tom, knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
A couple of things. Breathe. Do try to get a balance. I think people will look at me today and still think I don't have much of a work-life balance, but I am so much better at it than I was earlier on. You know, and remember to not sweat every little decision. You know, if your heart's in the right place and if you are always erring on the side of kids moving forward, you know, then even some of the tough decisions that you know this role entails become the right decisions to make. I've had to do some things that I know challenged me quite a bit, and I can look back and say that they were the right things to do. Didn't make it easier in the moment. So I think those pieces, you know, I think trust others is something that I've learned now over time. I think early on in my leadership career, and it probably was a reflection of my youth as much as anything else, I wasn't quite willing to trust as much as I've come to realize it's important to trust to that degree, whether it was colleagues or whether it was other leaders. You know, I think I probably missed out on some brilliant guidance by being a little too close to my chest.
Is there a class we should add to our schools that isn't currently taught that you know of?
You know, I know there's you know, lots of these skills that are being assigned to 21st century thinking, et cetera. But I really believe that there's always been a room or a place, you know, for the whole notion of problem solving, collaboration, authentic connecting of kids. And I don't know that we do enough of that for kids, where they just get to, in essence, do what you're doing through the podcast, do what I did early in my career using the phone, and that is just connecting with others. And I think equally, you know, that could be something that would benefit our adults, right? Yeah. You know this, whenever you go to a professional learning experience, as much of it is having to do with the collaboration as it has to do with the speaker you've just heard. I mean, I get jazzed up sitting at a table with other educators just talking about how they've processed what we just heard, because it's so, you know, in some ways a different approach from what I've seen, right? And so, you know, I think if we had a block of time in schools daily, or, you know, or three times a week, that was on some levels almost unstructured, but allowed us to process current challenges, current issues, things that we could tackle, you know, even if it meant that, you know, folks could roll out a problem to kids and say, hey, you know, how would you deal with this? Based on your experiences, what do you think we would do to approach this? That starts to connect on some levels with a real world application, you know, the things that are going on now outside of the school that they may be challenged with.
So I wonder, you know, what is it that why we don't have these classes? Is it because it's messier? It's harder to measure. It's not as sexy for politicians to talk about, you know?
Like, yep, you got it. And I think it's all of those things, you know, plus we've got a pretty staid view of what school is, right? You know, folks outside of our profession, you know, I have all kinds of opinions on our profession, but very few understand it until they've walked in our shoes. And so, you know, school has to look like the school people went to, despite, you know, what some folks outside of our system haven't been willing to embrace to the same degree. Is once upon a time, you know, if school wasn't your thing, you could still find a way, right? You could still carve a path out. I think those days are gone. I think in the absence now of high school graduation plus, it's going to be very hard for any young man or woman to find their way in the world. And so it's no longer as important that we all have the same eight blocks, depending on what year we're in, what grade level we're in, which is really driven by our age. You know, it may be that we've got to release some of the shackles and get into some of the more expansive creative thinking that we know our kids will be challenged with when they leave school. You know, you've got a classic example now going on in the United States. We ought to be able to have wonderful conversation around civic discourse, around election, around, without it, you know, being reduced to opinions only. I don't know that we're preparing our kids enough in schools today to engage in that wonderful civic dialogue.
Tom, how do you want to be remembered as a school leader?
You know, I'll go back to what I mentioned about John Dressler. To me, the real measure is how many leaders did you leave behind? Have I empowered other people to want to pursue leadership? Have I empowered other people to want to, you know, have a positive impact on the people they connect with daily, weekly, you know, hourly even, right? To me, that's the piece. When I see, you know, former colleagues who will reflect on the time we've spent together, you know, as the best time of their career, to me, that's important. You know, when I can help people in my current role grow in this role, when I help other people with their first writing project. You had mentioned earlier, Daniel, about, you know, if I'm interested in learning more about podcasts, well, that's going to be part of your legacy, right? And so, you know, when we start to do some of those things, you know, my real legacy, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, resides in my kids and my grandkids, right? They only see me as dad and grandpa. You know, the rest of the stuff, not many of them would be interested in, you know, in the 15 books that I've now been able to write. You know, they're proud of me, but I'm grandpa and dad, right? That's the real legacy.
Yeah, that's the most important one. Family first. Love it. What's one book, speaking of 15 books, and we're going to link up your books in the show notes, but what's a book that every principal should read right now and why?
The last book that Ken and I wrote, Starting a Movement, you know, to me is becoming very quickly an essential read. And the reason why, and let me preface this by saying it's not an original idea that Ken and I had, but it's such a foundational idea, and that is being purpose driven. The thrust of the book is to start with your why. It's always been viewed as a mission statement. I think it's got to be much more deep and intentional than that. When we really get our purpose figured out, our why figured out, it becomes the lens through which every decision we make in schools today runs through. From our initial hiring of new staff to every celebration we do at the school, every awards night, every talent show, every time one of our teams goes out to represent us, all of our academic focus. When we are really purpose-driven, it liberates every conversation. It's not Daniel has one viewpoint and Tom has another viewpoint. It's what's our collective commitment. What did we say was our purpose? Then it doesn't matter if you have a different view than I do on a grading practice. We both will go back and look at that through our purpose. And so I think, the bulk of my work, including my time just recently in Australia, has been driven by working with schools to really clarify their purpose. And for some schools, it's taken us over a year, not because the initial statement takes time, but because it's the practice. It's aligning now our policies, our procedures, and actually living what we said we wanted to live. Right? If you don't model what you teach, then you're teaching what you model. You can't just talk about respect in times of ease. It's got to be there when you're experiencing the greatest level of disrespect. That's when kids will know you're living it.
So much wisdom there. And for the listeners too, if you're new to the podcast, I interviewed Ken Williams, and that's episode 31, which also happens to be one of the top 10 downloaded podcast episodes of Better Leaders, Better Schools. I think Ken is number 5, I want to say.
Excellent. Yep. He's a brilliant man. I've been fortunate to be able to write the book with him.
Yeah, very cool guy. So, Tom, let's have a little fun here and talk about what do you do to blow off steam and have fun.
I like running. I'm a marathon runner. I've run 48 marathons.
Whoa. And
body willing, I'll continue to try and do 2 a year. It's the greatest stress release. It gives me a bit of time to myself where I do a whole lot of reflection and thinking. I sometimes think I come back with brilliant ideas. Those that I share those ideas with don't necessarily always agree with that notion, but it's a good way for me to spend a lot of time. And the other thing, as I mentioned earlier, is time with family. Those two things both serve to really ground me. As I said, when I get home, I'm just dad and husband and grandpa. And I get pretty jazzed up by that.
Right. Do you have any tips for running marathons? I've run 2. I've trained for 3. I got hurt last year before running. But yeah, I'm terrible at it.
Just, you know what it is. Just one step at a time.
Yeah.
Not thinking about the whole distance, but just thinking about getting to that next water station.
Right. That's right. Yes. The aid stations. Thank That's God right. for those.
Exactly. Hey,
so you made it, Tom. I'm proud of you. We're at the last question, which is quite a big one. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top 3 priorities building this school?
So, the first one's obviously not going to come as much of a surprise based on what we just shared a few minutes ago. And that is, I want to have a school where all the adults get together and we establish early on our collective commitment, right? So the hiring process for me would be critical. I want to make sure in that initial, so I'd want to have the freedom to bring in the adults that I knew were working in service of. Now, I got to say, in our profession, we're fortunate. That covers a lot of the folks I've been able to work with over time. So I'd want to have that collective commitment established early. I would want to make sure that, that we built in the kinds of time that was necessary to have some of the engaging dialogue, both for the adults and for the kids. So I think I would want to remove the barriers or the structures that we sometimes easily accede to, and that is, the definition of a block and that every kid's got to have 8 of them, etc. I'd rather that we have the conversation about, so what do you think every kid needs to know grade by grade, and ultimately be prepared for the next phase of their lives. So I wouldn't want to have, the restrictions that I think are sometimes real and sometimes assigned more real than they need to be, in terms of the curricular and the curricular outcomes. And then thirdly, I'd want to make sure that we had an environment that was so engaging that our parents and our community couldn't wait to be a part of that school. Now, I recognize that, the social fabric today is much different, and, we've got a lot of situations where both parents are working and, their time commitments are severely challenged. But I'd want to have a school that they couldn't wait to be a part of, that really spoke and connected with their values as much as the values that, we in the school might have in place. I don't think it's ever been just about financial resources. I don't know of a time in my 34 years where we ever sat around and said, you know what, we got just the right amount of money this year. I don't think that's going to be a factor. I think if we get the other things right, then we don't necessarily have the same stressor about where the dollar is coming from.
Great. Tom, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The only parting advice I have is this, and that is the decisions that we make in school come down to for me, the difference between creating the right kinds of attributes and behaviors or condoning the wrong kind. And so I think the choice is, you can create it or you can condone it, but let's be clear, either way you own it. So let's make a conscious decision to own the right stuff. It's hard work, but I am so inspired and so confident with the educators I meet that we're up for the challenge. A couple of ways of getting in touch with me. Blog is just Tom Hierk, my website, tomhierk.com. And then Gmail always works, just thierk@gmail.com. Or if you're on Twitter, just @thierk. All of those will work.
Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Tom. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Tom in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episodes, links to all the resources, and the best ways to connect. On most mobile phones, you could tap the cover art and the show notes page will magically appear. Tom, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.